Okay, for today I want to discuss the minog, the mother of all minhagim. The minog of simonim ilson. Rosh Hashanah, we have all different types of food, head of a fish, we have beets, craw, melons, all different types of foods. Perhaps tomorrow we'll go into the foods in more detail. I did not prepare the exact foods today. We'll go into some of the details of the different types of foods tomorrow. But where does this minhag come from to recite a Yehi Ratzon? And the Yehi Ratzons basically focus on the foods and the symbolism of the foods, and it should be for us a good omen for the year. So it comes from the Gemara Masechta Horios and the Gemara Masechta Kresos. I'll read the words of the Gemara. Amar Abaye, Hashta Diamarta, Simona Milsa. Now that we have established that there's something called a simon, simone milsa, doing small things that are symbolic, have significance, he, le'oila, it's a very powerful expression. Le'oila means don't miss. Make sure you are consistent in always doing the following under every circumstance. Yehei rogil. Rogil is another expression. You should accustom yourself. Now notice the words of the Gemara. To see, bereishas, does not say eat. All it says in the Gemara is to see, bereishasa, in the beginning of the year, kora. Kora is a melon. Ruvia. What's a ruvia? Carob? No, that's, okay, karte. Karte is leek. Silka, beets, vitamre, and dates. Okay, we'll discuss these things blineder tomorrow. But the basic idea, why these five things? So Rashi says the simon is that these things, the gadlu maher, these things grow very quickly. And it's a sign that good things should happen very quickly. We should grow very quickly. Good fortune should come upon us swiftly, in haste. And also, furthermore, Rashi says, and the ikar demaske, some of these things are sweet. Okay, so this is the Gemara, this is the ikar of Gemara, and this is the parish of Rashi. Every single word of this Gemara has connotations, has chidushim, and is subject to much discussion. So let's go through it slowly, one thing at a time. The first thing the Gemara says is le'olam. That's a very powerful expression. Olam in Chazal normally means you should never ever miss under any circumstance. Then it says Yehei Rogil. Rogil means not just once, you should do it a few times. Now let me right away jump into something which I really had written down for later on. How many times do we make this simonim on Rosh Hashanah? So I think most of us are aware that you only do this simonim the first night of Rosh Hashanah. That's the ikar minhag. You don't have to do the simonim the second night, and you don't have to do the simonim by day. Only the first night. Why? Because it says, the Gemara goes further, lemechse bereish shasa. In the beginning of the year, does not say in the Gemara Aleph Rosh Hashanah, does not say Yimei Rosh Hashanah, it says the Reish, even though Rosh Hashanah is 2 days, but the Reish is always the night of Rosh Hashanah. But yet it says Yehei Rogil. Rogil means you should accustom yourself. So that can mean every single year. But it's a little bit forced to say that the words Yehei Rogil mean you should do this every single year when we're dealing with the year itself. Some of the commentators want to suggest, based upon this expression, Rogil, that you should really eat the simonim at night, the first night, the second night, and by day. That's not a common minhag, to eat three times, because you only establish a chazakah, you Rogil b'kach, when you do something three times. So there are those that have the custom to eat the simonim three times over the course of Rosh Hashanah. First night, second night, and during the day. We don't do this. Most don't do this. Now, I'll just tell you a very, very popular vart on how to remember that the simonim are done on the first day and not the second day. We discussed this on Friday, that there are 2 days Rosh Hashanah. There's Dina Koshya and Dina Rafia. There is the harsh din and there is the soft din. The first day Rosh Hashanah is a harsh din. It's a difficult din. The second day of Rosh Hashanah is called Dina Rafia. It's soft, it's easy, it's much easier to survive and to prevail through the din. In Chazal, in the Sifrei Kabbalah, the first day is called Leah, and the second day is called Rachel. I don't know what this is all about. We have Leah and Rachel, just like Tikkun Chatzos. Tikkun Chatzos, there are two parts to Tikkun Chatzos. There is Tikkun Leah and Tikkun Rachel. If you ever open up a siddur, most people don't say Tikkun Chatzos. Some people go their whole life, they don't even say Tikkun Chatzos once. But every once in a while, if you're up at Chatzos, midnight, 1 o'clock, and you can't fall asleep, at least once in your life, it's Kedai. We always have that Yesoid. You should always do everything at least once in your life to have that experience. We discuss with Tfilin Rabbeinu Tam. Even if you don't wear a Tfilin Rabbeinu Tam, it's not so bad. Once in your life, you should put on Tfilin Rabbeinu Tam. Shouldn't be a karkaf lemonach Tfilin Rabbeinu Tam. Once in your life, it's kedai to say Tikkun Chatzos. And in Tikkun Chatzos, you learn there are two parts. There is Tikkun Leah and Tikkun Rachel. They represent different things. I don't know what these things are. But Leah represents harshness. The Eine Leah Rakos. Leah's eyes, she cried. Leah had a lot of tsar. Leah was under the impression that she would marry Esav. She was depressed. She was sad. Leah represents din, harshness. Rachel, the Rachel, hoyisa, yifas, toyar vifas mar. She was beautiful. It represents rachamim. Second day Rosh Hashanah is called Dina Rafia, it's Rachel. First day of Rosh Hashanah is Dina Koshia, the Eine Leah Rakois Tsar, it is Leah. When Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel, what did Rachel do? What did Rachel do? Rachel gave the simonim to Leah. So it's very easy to remember. Who gave the simonim to who? Rachel, the second day, gave over the simonim to Leah. Leah's the first day. The simonim that we do on Rosh Hashanah are always done on the first day. And the way to remember it's the first day, not the second day, is to remember the first day is Leah. It seems like this is very well known. Everyone knows that the first day is Dina Koshia, which is Leah, and the second day is Dina Rafia, which is Rachel. And everyone knows that Rachel gave the simonim to Leah. So the second day was gracious and said to the first day, you on the first day can have the simonim. On the first day you can go and say all the hirotzons about the fish and about the carob and about the beets and the melon and so on and so forth. Are you with me? Yeah. It's like when the children come home and they say like by the Haggadah, this is the type of thing they would say about the first night of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, but that's one idea. So how many times do we do Simonim? We only do the first night. By the way, and when do we make the Shechianu? The Shechianu was set on the second night. Because we make a bracha to the Safik, do you make a Shechianu? The Safik, we make a Shechianu on the second night of Rosh Hashanah. In order to avoid the issue, Yom Arichta, it's not Yom Arichta, we have a new fruit. The second night is when you make the Shechianu, but the first night is when you make the, do the Simonim. That is also another source for this minute comes from the Goinim. The Goinim tell us that it really comes from the time of Ezra. This, the Pasuk in Sefer Nehemiah, everyone knows this Pasuk. Ichlu mashmanim ushisu mamtakim. Ezra told Klal Yisrael, today is Rosh Hashanah, you should be in a state of joy, I want you all to go home, I want you to eat mashmanim, things which are fatty, and drink things that are sweet. Ezra was instructing them to take for themselves simon, that the things that you do tonight should be an omen, a good omen for the coming year. So it goes back even before the Gemara. The Gemara says, in the name of Abaya, Hashto di amarto simonim milsa, a person should do the following things. But the truth is, the Goyim tell us, really the source of what Abai is telling us comes from Sefer Nehemiah, where Ezra told Klal Yisrael, I don't want you to be depressed, I want you to eat and drink sweet things. Okay, now we are accustomed to eating these things. The truth is, not everyone is of the opinion that you're supposed to eat these things. The Simon, as the Gemara really says, Yehei Ragel Lemechazeh, to look at them. They're on the table, and you should look. The simon is seeing, not necessarily eating. What is the simon? So we have to get that in tomorrow. Is it the taste? Is it the name of the object? or the way the object grows. The siman can be interpreted many different ways. In the name, I'm sure many of you learned yesterday's daf, Salmon, a person, there was a question in the Gemara, what should you make a bracha on the Perusa, or should you make a bracha on the Sholin? A person has in front of him two different pieces of bread. Is it better to make a bracha on the bread that's broken or the bread that's sholem? So there's a person whose name was Salmon, and Salmon said, you make a pshara. You take the prusa, you bring it into the sholem, and you wrap the two together, and you make a bracha on both. So the Amor that heard Salmon give this solution to make a compromise, oh, what's your name? Salmon. So he said, oh, Salmon, that comes from the word sholem. You've made peace between the Amorayim, you've made peace between the halachas, you want to make a compromise. So the name of these things itself represent various simanim, and just looking at them is sufficient. Others say, no, you should actually eat these things, and you should, after when you eat them, you should make the Yehi Ratzon. Very important issue, when do you say the Yehi Ratzon? Do you say the Yehi Ratzon before you make the Bracha Rishayna? Do you say the Yehi Ratzon after you finish eating the fruit? Or do you make the Yehi Ratzon in between the Bracha and the eating? Now, after eating the fruit, you definitely do not make the bracha. You do not say the Yehi Ratzon. It's too late. Once the object has been consumed, it's no longer here, it's too late to say the Yehi Ratzon. It's not as effective. When will be the next best time to say the Yehi Ratzon? Before you take a bite from the fruit. But the problem is, if you're saying the Yehi Ratzon before you make the bracha, it's premature. It doesn't really go on the food. So the best thing, of course, would to say the Yehi Ratzon after you make the bracha, before you eat. Problem is that called a hefsek? And the truth, that's today's daf. Today's daf, the Gemara talks about making a bracha and then telling someone, feeding your animals before you take a bite from the food. So the truth is, Mikra Hadin, it's not necessarily a hefsek. Since you're saying this tefillah for the tzarech achila, Me'ikar hadin, it is not muchach that it's a hefsek to recite the Yehi Ratzon in between the bracha and the achila. Halacha l'maisa, we don't do it. Halacha l'maisa, we consider it to be a hefsek, and therefore the only solution is to make the Yehi Ratzon before, to say the Yehi Ratzon before you make the bracha, or you say you make the bracha, you eat a little bit, and then before you can conclude eating the remainder of the food, then you say the Yehi Ratzon. Many commentators are of the opinion that the Iker Simon is the Yehi Ratzon. It's not even so much the food on the table, it's not so much the eating, it's not so much the combination of the Yehi Ratzon with the food, it's just the Yehi Ratzon itself. At Kedei Kach, the Kaf HaChaim, which is a major player, Kaf HaChaim is from the Pesach Hadar, previous generation, he says, if you don't have the fruits, it's okay, just have the cart. As they send you in the mail, all of the stock organizations, they send the promotion, they send the card. You can say all of the Yehi Ratzons without the fruit, because you want to have good simanim. There are fruit out there in the world. There are beets. You can say with the whole Yehi Ratzon, even if you don't have the fruit at all. Isn't that an incredible chiddush? Now then comes the next issue: should you say in the Yehi Ratzon Hashem's name? If you look at the cards, some of them say Hiratzon Lufanecha, we should grow quickly like this fruit, whatever it says. But it does not say Hashem's name. In some cards it says Hiratzon Milufanecha Hashem Elokeinu. So do you say Hashem's name, do you not say Hashem's name? So there are different opinions. Some say you should. If you're being mispal, it's a tefillah, you should say Hashem's name. Some say no, you should not say Hashem's name. Now it could be, the difference of opinion is it a tefillah or is it a statement? This touches upon the very big issue. When you do this, what do you do when you have siman? You have to really go to different sources. Let's go to the Levim and Sefer Melachim. We find many examples in Sefer Shmuel, Sefer Melachim, where our prophets told individuals to do things, and the things that they will do will serve as a siman to bring about bigger things. to bring about, if you shoot an arrow, by shooting the arrow, that represents you will go out to war and you will succeed in war. You already begin to implement the decree, the divine decree. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want you to go to war and conquer a certain nation. So by you taking an arrow and shooting an arrow, you've already begun the process. And once the process has begun, it cannot stop. It's a statement. You're doing something. If you're doing something, there's no purpose in asking Hashem in being mispah. You're not praying. You're actually bringing it to be. So it's not necessarily the correct thing to say Hashem's name. It's a statement. By doing this, this is going to happen. I don't need to ask Hashem that it should happen. It will happen. It is going to happen. We don't know. We assume we have emunah. That means, and this touched upon a very big issue. It is an expression of faith that this will be. We have faith that everything that happens, kol ma'adav rachmana letavav. We may not see it, but we have faith it will happen. You're not praying to Hashem. We are bringing out your will. There's no place to ask Hashem that it should be. But maybe on the other hand, we are praying that we're doing things and we're asking Hashem the same way we've done this. May you continue the process. May you bring about that this thing should happen. Then it is a prayer. And if it is a prayer, the Shema Hashem is appropriate. So it touches upon the core of what are you doing? What are you doing? The Gemara doesn't say to eat it. Nowhere in the Gemara, nowhere does it tell you to eat these things. It just says you should see it. So what does that mean? You should see it. The Gemara doesn't say you should may say Yehi Ratzon. But we do say, so what are we trying to say? These are just ideas I'm throwing out, and it's not clear. Everyone has different ideas, but you should be aware of. When do you say the Yehi Ratzon? Before, the middle, after. Do you say Hashem's name? Do you not say Hashem's name? Do you need to say the Yehi Ratzon? Do you need the food items to say the Yehi Ratzon? You can say the Yehi Ratzon without the food items. Or you don't need the Yehi Ratzon altogether.
Where's the
The Gemara, this is the Gemara Masechta Horios on Daf Yud Beis Amid Beis, and the same Gemara appears in Kresos Daf Vav Amid Aleph. That's where the Gemara and the Goinim. I'm not sure where it's where in the Goinim, but the Goinim say that it comes from an earlier source from Ezra. Okay, let me just some other quick ideas relating to this theme. Now, another one of the simon that we do on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, this we're really going a little bit off. Is part of the simon is to dip the apple in the honey. Now, we'll talk about the apple tomorrow, but that's a more modern minhag, is to dip the apple in the honey. It used to be the minhag, the real minhag was to eat honey by itself. Does anyone have that minhag? Just to eat raw honey. It seems like this minhag is not very common today, but this definitely was very common in ancient times. Today what's common is you take the apple, you dip the apple in the honey, and you dip the challah in the honey. But the real minhag was to eat raw honey. And when we say raw honey, it doesn't mean our honey, which is pasteurized, which means it's been cooked. That's not called raw honey. That's called dvash chai. Dvash chai means they would bring in the honeycombs. They would go out to the field, and they would put on the table the actual wax, and they would lick from the wax the honey from the bee. That's called in halacha dvash chai. That's the term that's used in Chazal to describe wax that comes straight from the honeycombs, not from the plastic bottle which has been cooked and pasteurized. That's not chai, that's dead honey, because it's already been cooked and heat has been applied and has ruined its purity. Dvash chai is mesamel chayim, life. Now why dafka dvash? So there are many sources for this. One is a pasuk in Tehillim. It says in I'll get to that later, I don't have that in front of me now, that pasuk can tell him. But why dvash? This is a very, very beautiful idea. Why dvash of honeys, of bees? In Chazal, a bee is called a dayan. The bees have the nida of mishpat. Where do we see that? Because if a bee doesn't like someone or doesn't like something, it stings the object that it is not pleased with. If a person bothers, the bee doesn't necessarily sting. doesn't. If you don't bother the bee, it doesn't sting. When you bother the bee, it bites. It stings. Mishpat. The bee takes revenge against a person or object that disturbs its peace and well-being. The bee represents the concept of din, of mishpat. And what comes from a bee? Dvash, sweetness. What we're trying to do on Rosh Hashanah is trying to transform din to rachamim. Rachamim, mercy, is sweet. It's delicious. It's sweet. It brings bracha. It brings good things. But Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are Yimei Hadin. It's a time of harsh judgment. The Dvash Chai that comes from the bee is the perfect symbol of what we're trying to do on Rosh Hashanah. The bee represents the concept of Mishpat. It's a creature which is Noikim. It takes revenge for injustice. But we extract from the din sweetness, Dvash, Rachem. That's one idea given by the commentators. Another idea given by the commentators is that Dvash, from beginning to end, is beautiful. Where does the bee produce, extract the honey? Where does it all start? The pollen from the flowers. Flowers are beautiful. It costs a lot of money today to go to a good florist. A hoinraf. It all starts with what's beautiful, toiv lamare. And the product, after the process concludes, is honey, which is toiv, which is delicious. It's nechmad, it's pleasant to the palate. From beginning to end, the process, from beginning to end, is a beautiful, pleasant process. Unlike almost everything else in this world. Talk about meat. It's not very pleasant to process meat. You have to slaughter an animal. Death. There's blood. And then there's salting. And then there's cooking, which involves heat and fire. It's a very unpleasant process to prepare meat. Bread. Bread you have to plant in the ground. It's hard, crushing labor to plow the field. Decay has to occur. You have to take the seed, put it in the ground, it has to rot. It has to then take root. It has to be rain. You have to crush it, pulverize it, separate, sift it. It's not a pleasant process. The result is wonderful. Piece of bread. It's nothing like a fresh bagel. But it didn't get there so easily. It went through a lot of tsar. Meat, as we explained, everything in life is like this. But dvash, it's pleasant from beginning to end. It starts out with a beautiful flower and a little creature, a colorful little creature, buzzing around, extracts the pollen, takes it to the nest. There's a great sense of order. There's a queen bee, there's malchus, and there's a seder. It's a very beautiful process from beginning to end. Just don't disturb them. If you don't disturb them, everything will go okay. That's what we want. Mereishis Hashana ad Achris Shana should be with pleasantness, should be sweet for the eye and pleasant to the palate. It's a very beautiful mashal to compare why the minig is to eat raw honey on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, another thing I forgot to mention: why is it so important that we mention why is it our custom that we do recite Yehi Ratzon, all these Yehi Ratzons? So one of the reasons given is it should not appear to be nechosh, some type of magic or some type of forbidden. I don't know all these fancy English expressions. You're not allowed to look for signs. Omens. Nichosh. It's forbidden to go to a person and ask them, give me a sign, if a cat will step over so-and-so, if the mirror breaks, and so-and-so, that means a sign that this and this is going to happen, 7 years of bad luck. These type of things border on avodah zarah mamish. So we come Rosh Hashanah, and all of a sudden we're doing all these strange things. These are omens. Oh, on the table we have this funny exotic fruit, and this exotic fruit, and this vegetable, and that. These are omens for the year. You got to do that. So what we do is we recite a Yehi Ratzon to show Chas V'Shalom, it should not be a violation of Yichush. It's nothing more than a tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or it's a simen that things will be okay. It should not, Chas V'Shalom, resemble in any way the forbidden concept of Nichush. Next question is, okay, let's just jump around a little bit. There's also the minhag to dip your bread, to dip the bread in dvash. So why don't we dip the bread in dvash? So that is indeed a pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk says, chelev perek pe aleph. In Tehillim, the pasuk says, chelev chita. How does the pasuk begin? I forgot to name the pasuk, but you look it up later on. Perek pe aleph, chelev chita, umitzur dvash aspieka. So first it says the fat. Vayachileu mechelev chita. Hashem has fed you from the fat of the chita, of the wheat kernel, which means bread. Bread. Umitzur dvash. And from the rack of honey. Aspieka, I have satisfied you. So we have the two are juxtaposed. I have fed you from the chelev chita umitzur devash. Something to remember every time you say this pasuk. It's the bringing together of bread with honey. And that's what we do. We don't do this only on Rosh Hashanah. The meaning is to do this from Rosh Hashanah through Hoshana Rabbah. Some even do it even on Simchas Torah, different minhagim. I don't know the differences, but we makayim that pasuk that it should be sweet. Now it seems that this somehow this took over the original minhag. The original minhag was to dip, to eat, as I mentioned before, raw honey. To eat raw honey. It seems that we don't have any more today a dvash chai. It's not so easy to get for whatever reason, and also became a problem with the bracha, because do you make a separate bracha, do you not make a separate bracha, in order to avoid the issue of making a bracha. So if you dip the challah in the honey, so the challah is the ikar, the honey is the tafel, that takes away the problem of making the bracha. Well, there are various halachic issues with that, and that's why somehow this has taken over the original meaning of just to eat raw honey. We dip the challah in the honey. Another mile of honey. Honey is a preservative. If you take something and you want to preserve it, honey has the koyach to preserve something in honey for you can preserve something which would otherwise decay and rot in honey for a very long time. Therefore, eating honey is a simen that Hashem should preserve us for a very long time. The bracha that Hashem has given us should be preserved. Now, if you dip your bread in honey, do you dip your bread in salt? We once spent time on this. That was one of the first things we discussed in our minhag section. Do you dip the bread in salt? So yes, I mean, we had a discussion. So yes, no, but there are different customs. Some during these days refrain from dipping the bread in salt, but the salt should still be on the table, because the salt on the table is a shmirah. But do you now need to dip the bread in the salt after you're dipping it in the honey? It's a contradiction. Something which is sweet, they need to dip. There's something called dipping. For some reason, I don't know why, it's better to dip than it is to apply. I don't know why. But that's how it is. Today you have all these fancy dip spoons, right? And you take out. It appears that's not ideal. Ideal it is to take from that nice. You know, you shouldn't insult your wife who bought that nice spoon, that nice honey, whatever it's called. So you take that and you scoop out some honey and you put the honey on the plate, and then you take your challah and you dip the challah into the honey. That's what appears to be, also with salt for sure, with salt you're supposed to do that. You're supposed to pour salt on the table, on the plate, and dip the challah into the salt three times, or one time. Now, what happens when you dip the challah in the honey? Do you also dip the challah in salt? So there are different customs. Some do not, and some, what's so terrible? Do both. You dip the challah in the salt, and you also dip it in the honey. You have both. In Makayim, both in Hagim, these are different. I think the Chazanish did not. I read the Chazanish, he only dipped the challah in honey. He did not dip the challah in salt during these days from Rosh Hashanah through Shana Rabbah. Okay, I think I pretty much finished what I wanted to tell you for today. Let me just make sure I got everything. Okay, I think for today we pretty much got, and we'll continue this idea, Mir Tashem, tomorrow.